meeting will come to order as everyone has had just a few complications this morning. I think even our page is caught on the road somewhere. Mm-hmm. So we'll be here shortly. So today we have only one item on the agenda, but it has a long history, which we will hear about. And by the way, it is not a museum for bells. We've started to put on this agenda and spreadsheets, it's the Natural History Museum. And I'm sure, I think in your packets you have the laws of 1872, which begin the history of this particular project, which is a bit of fun to read. So we are happy to have you with us this morning, and I'm going to just talk about one other piece of history. Representative Carlson isn't here right now, but he was author for a number of years of a planetarium project, and it was scheduled to be on the top of the current new Minneapolis Library. And for a number of reasons, that didn't work out, and at one point we changed the jurisdiction, I think, from Minneapolis to Hennepin County. And then we canceled the project altogether because, and I think we extended the date at one point in our laws, and then we canceled the funding altogether. They'll give you a bit of news about where that project is now. So welcome to the committee. I don't know who's going first, but please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lee Famuler, and I want to thank you for the opportunity this morning to talk about something I'm very passionate about, which is the Bell Museum of Natural History. I've been a board member for 4 years, but my engagement with the university and the museum actually spans 40 years. Way back in 1973, the museum was actually and literally the first building I stepped foot in Minnesota. And the occasion was I had a meeting with the former director, Dr. Harrison Tordoff, to talk about coming to the university for graduate school. And the museum was just a really natural draw for me, and I've never left. I've been in Minnesota ever since. I had the opportunity to study with the museum's outstanding researchers, had access to its invaluable collections, and really witnessed the unique public education role of the university. The Bell also turned out to be central to my 30-year career with the DNR. Former professors who I'd studied with became colleagues as we really worked together to expand our knowledge of Minnesota's plants and animals. And when we began the Minnesota County Biological Survey in the 1980s, the curators and collections at the university were just a natural partner and an invaluable partner to the DNR, and remain so today. And then when I became the mother of two daughters, the Bell Museum was an obvious weekend destination, and it really enriched their understanding of the natural history in Minnesota. One of those daughters actually became an actually came on to work as the with the summer camp program at the museum, and both daughters are now earning their PhDs in the scientific fields. One of the greatest values of the museum is that the natural history of Minnesota is literally embedded within its treasures. And that includes the collections that document the past and the present. It includes the renowned dioramas by Minnesota's own Francis Lee Jacques. It includes the researchers who continue to work to unravel the mysteries of the natural world. It includes the school children who visit the museum and get to delight in finding out what it's like to actually walk in a bog or giggle as they touch a snake for the first time in the touch and see room. And it includes the artists who visit the museum and whose own work is inspired by the collections and the exhibits in the museum. And nowadays, most recently, it includes our new Exploradome, which is really new technology that allows you to do a virtual tour of things as small as the human heart to as large and expansive as the universe. But we have a challenge, and that's that the museum really isn't up to par. And there's a lot of challenges in terms of it being able to compete in today's market. And there are things that amenities that are not part of the museum that I think you would be surprised aren't there. Some simple things like air conditioning, new digital technology, sufficient storage space, things that really have not kept grade with other institutions. So I'm here to urge you today to really support bonding dollars for a new museum so we can continue the legacy, continue the first-rate hands-on natural history experiences that are provided to educators, researchers, and scientists. And so the museum can really remain a jewel on the university campus and for the entire state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Can you please? Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Professor Susan Weller. I am the current director of the Bell Museum of Natural History and Planetarium. We have an historic opportunity to create an integrated planetarium and natural history museum facility in order to support a higher level of STEM education in Minnesota. For those of you who are not familiar with our story, the museum was created in 1872, 141 years ago, as the state's Natural History and Geological Survey, as documented in sections 1 through 5 in this original legislation. It included the establishment of our state's Natural History Museum. The survey and museum were then entrusted to the University of Minnesota, which has been the faithful steward of your state museum ever since. In 1940, the current museum was public building was opened, and much later renamed for its benefactor, James Ford Bell, the founder of General Mills. Minnesota's renowned wildlife artist, Francis Lee Jacques, was commissioned to paint the backgrounds of the permanent displays. And today our dioramas are ranked among the top three in the nation, competing with the American Museum of Natural History and the Denver Museum in Colorado for those honors. In 1964, an addition to the museum provided flexible state for traveling exhibits. And here you see in a series of gallery talks how we often interact with the public, bringing university research directly to them for their questions and answers. In 1968, we opened the first Touch and See room. It's the first in the nation at the time. And it encouraged the then normal format that it's okay to play and learn at the same time. In education jargon, we call it inquiry learning. And here you see some of our younger visitors examining that snake, asking questions, pretending to be a moose, and for a couple of visitors, imagining what it's like to be a beetle in our biosphere built for two. Those are the two little heads popped up among the little greens. And you notice the young man with the Bell Museum t-shirt on? That's one of our many museum staff who are university students. Up to 30 students per year are employed by us as museum staff. They're typically science majors with career interests in environmental sciences and education. In other words, we're a working museum providing university students with the opportunity to build their resumes in the real world. In 2011, we expanded our ability to serve our Minnesota communities with the integration of the Explorodome programs. The Minneapolis Planetarium Society transferred their Explorodome technology, planetarium programming, and board members joined our advisory board in that fall. The regional network serves up to 47 school districts through the TIES network, which we are plugged into. And then on this map, you see The reds are our current partners, and the blues are our soon-to-be partners in this network. And this includes MinSCU, this includes K-12 schools down in Rochester, university campuses, and you're all familiar with Skype. These planetaria can Skype to one another, and so in real time, we can have university researchers talking with students out in greater Minnesota. And so this is a phenomenal opportunity to leverage this amazing technology in support of K-12 education. As I mentioned, our astronomy shows can now be delivered throughout the state. And this is not your dad's or your grandpa's planetarium show. If you're familiar with video games, imagine being dropped into the universe and then asking your guide, you know, well, I'd like to go see the rings of Saturn. Or maybe you want to go understand why Pluto is no longer a planet. And our museum educators will drive you there, and you'll drop in on Pluto and compare it to other exoplanets. And so, again, this idea that the students drive the learning experience is key, is central to what we're trying to accomplish here. Our expanding potential, though, is limited by the inflexibility of the 1940s building. The theater that we've created within the museum can only house up to 30 students, and they have to lie on their backs in order to experience our Explorodome show. And you see this wonderful front view, but if you have a stroller, or if you're in a wheelchair, I'm really sorry, but you're going to have to go in through a backside entrance. We simply are barely ADA compliant. Our 1940s energy inefficient windows threaten to fall out, and inadequate climate control is endangering our natural heritage, the cultural heritage, our dioramas and wildlife art collection, which is valued at over $20 million. We are also limited by health and safety concerns. Water is our enemy right now. You see the water vac in the basement, which is poised and ready for the spring thaw because the basement routinely floods. We have then consequently issues with mold, and so we run abatement all the time. Again, deferred maintenance is endangering our state's heritage of our dioramas and wildlife art collections. Now, why would expanding our potential be critical now? Why now? I could go through this laundry list of reasons, but what I'd like to focus on is specifically how the museum contributes to being the 95% solution to STEM literacy. And I promise this is my one nerdy professor slide. If you imagine a lifespan from 0 to 75, that's your x-axis there, and a typical school day from 8 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, that's your y-axis, and then a typical school year, September to June, and then the time you spend in school is represented by those blocks, roughly 5 years of age to 18 years of age or post-secondary. All those hours, months, and years add up to roughly 5% of our lifetime. And science education is literally dripped in at 60 minutes a week during the school year. We have a critical need to increase, given that the workforce, we expect an expansion in these environmental science jobs in the next few decades. We really need to increase students and families' ability to learn science during the rest of their lifetime outside of school, that 95%. And this study by Falk and Durking in 2010 examines how institutions like science museums, zoos, and aquaria are critical components of our solution to improve science literacy here in the U.S. So what I am asking for is and what we have before us is an historic opportunity to integrate a state-of-the-art planetarium with the state's Natural History Museum to bring a higher level of STEM education to Minnesota. The proposed location is as a science gateway to the St. Paul Green campus, and here where the little Google balloon lies is near the intersection of Larpenteur and Cleveland, not far off 280 and 36, just to give you your bearings. And the St. Paul campus is that sort of beigey stuff in the lower right corner. What this investment project entails is a win for Minnesota citizens. As I mentioned, the new facility will strengthen pre-K to 16 STEM education statewide, particularly in environmental sciences. A 120-seat planetarium will enhance our ability to develop and deliver statewide programming in astrophysics, earth sciences, and health sciences. And it will be rooted in the best of the university research. So we will be providing public access to the amazing research that occurs at the University of Minnesota. Now, the project has been delayed. It was originally proposed in 2007, for those of you who were around at the time. And my predecessor, Scott Lanyon, was before this committee in 2008. We have invested over $5 million in private donor dollars to in the design and to be ready to build this building when the time comes. But to close, we don't know where the next Norman Borlaug or Rachel Carson will come from. They will come, however, from these children pictured here in this slide. And in support of this next generation, and strengthening of K-12 STEM education, we thank you for your attention. And I see that our other board member, Peter Lepick, has been able to make it through the snow and join us. So I'm going to stop and ask him to say a few words as a planetarium enthusiast. So, Peter, with that.
Mr. Lepick, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Susan, and Madam Chair, and the rest of the committee. I apologize for my tardiness. I normally have a very short commute and kind of forgot what half an inch of snow does to our freeways. I was a former board member of the Planetarium and have been on the Bell Museum board now for 2 years. And I just wanted to say a word or two about what I feel is the importance of this facility and how it fits into really the science and technology education. I think we can all agree that STEM education, science, technology, and mathematics is very important to the future of Minnesota and to the future of our children. But the classroom learning is really only a piece of the puzzle. Inspiration is what leads our children to enter a career in the sciences and in technology. And I think if you talk to just about any entrepreneur, any scientist, any engineer, you will find at some point in their past there was a moment when they were inspired, when they got excited about something. And that's really what this project is all about. The museum and the planetarium leads to the inspirational moments. We have a unique opportunity here to build a state-of-the-art facility. And the state of the art, especially in the planetarium technology, has really advanced in the last 10 years. This is not the Starball planetarium that we had in the old Minneapolis facility. This is a state-of-the-art digital projection facility that allows us to not just project the stars, but really fly through 3D space and produce programming that covers nearly any topic that we might want to cover. And it's going to be the hub, actually already is the hub, of a network of facilities around the state. I believe that Susan spoke to that. So this is not just a facility. This is really about building a network of education and technology. We've done a lot in the last 2 years since the merger of the planetarium with the Bell Museum. With almost no resources, we have a permanent facility now. It's a small room in the basement of the museum, but it actually is a permanent planetarium facility that you can go and there are scheduled shows. And we've gone about as far as we can go in that facility. And I think it's very important that we move to the next stage and have a state-of-the-art combined natural history museum and planetarium so that we can create that inspiration for our children. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a couple of questions, and then I am going to ask you to talk a little more about a couple of other elements to this. Members, I've been working on this. I think this is my seventh year. we hope perhaps this is the last. Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just looking through your sheet here, and just wanted you to explain it. It says, since the legislature last voted to support a new facility in 2009, conditions have continued to deteriorate. Explain what happened in 2009, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, in 2009, this was the it was an off bonding cycle year like this one, and we had brought the project back at the request of the governor and President Brunix, and the and both the House and the Senate passed a bonding bill in conference committee that included the Bell Museum's Natural History new facility in St. Paul. It was also, you might remember, the depths of the recession, and there was a determination made that by the governor's office that this was more of a want than a need at the time, and we were line item vetoed. That we were then, the project was then put on ice, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want some clarification.
Representative Norton?
Thank you. As a longtime Nebraskan, I spent many many weekends in my childhood at our Natural History Museum at Morrill Hall, which has a different meaning in Nebraska than it does here, I understand. Yeah, and so, I'm very supportive, and Rochester's always been lucky enough since I've lived in the state to have a planetarium down there, which I'm sure you have a relationship with, and it looked like on that map you noted it. The one question I have, I think we need these sorts of facilities in our state for our children and adults, frankly, for that matter, but I've noticed even in Rochester we have a hard time getting local kids to our local planetarium because funding cuts have so dramatically impacted the ability for folks to get buses, frankly, to get kids anywhere. So you mentioned a lot of this, you talk about K-12 and improving K-12 STEM. Can you talk a little bit about the usage that you have? I mean, perhaps the Twin Cities schools have more money and still can do field trips. That was cut off our budget many, many years ago and is, you know, really, really limited. So I'm just wondering, you know, can you talk a little bit about the number of kids and how they get to your facility?
Ms. Weller, is that your question?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I might. And so there are two ways to solve that problem, Representative Norton. One is through scholarships for buses. So we go out and try to raise through foundations scholarships to bring school buses to us. We also go to the schools, and one of the wonderful things about working with the St. Paul schools is they have the Como Planetarium, and so we can literally push our educational programming to the Como Planetarium so they get the same quality as they would if they came to us. And for those schools that don't have or cannot get to the Como Planetarium, we arrange to travel our portable planetarium. So we have a portable planetarium that that was gifted to us by the Planetarium Society, and it goes on the road, comes out of the minivan, blows up, and I mean not blows up, but inflates. That was the correct term. And then we can bring school children in. So we meet teachers where they live and assist them in coming to visit us. So it's very much a partnership, and I. And one of the things I will mention is that teachers are looking for expanded opportunities. And so when they do rent that bus and they do take that day, if we've already begun combining natural history tours, one-hour science labs, and Exploradome astronomy tours so that the children get from basically soups to nuts, all the science you can pack into one day. Plus, they have the inspiration of being on a first-rate university campus and visiting the facilities and aspirationally being encouraged to think about they themselves going on for higher education, whether at the U or elsewhere. Of course, we hope they'll become Gophers, but we really do our best to leverage scarce dollars in meaningful ways.
Yeah,
thank you very much, and I appreciate that, and I know actually the Twin Cities has a plethora of opportunities and actually do a fairly good job of trying to get out state, but I just would encourage you to continue to have that mindset. An opportunity like this for some children is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I mean, I run into people daily who've never been to the state capitol. So the more we can keep in mind outstate Minnesota and
wish it was me.
Wish it was us. Well, thank you, Representative Bonney. To just keep in mind the need to bring these opportunities to rural Minnesota as often as we can, and to keep in mind that many school districts like mine have cut field trips, and so if we don't go to them, they don't have the money any longer to come to us. So thank you for that.
And to that point, your statewide map, you've got the stars. Do you happen to, can you just name those? It looks like about 11 locations. Is anyone able to name those locations around the state? Looks like 11 places around the state.
Sure. So so we have a printed version of this map, which we'll be happy to provide copies of, that does have a list. The list is the Brainerd Forest View Planetarium, Champlin Jackson Middle School, Duluth Marshall Planetarium, Hibbing Paluchi Space Theater, Mankato East High School, Marshall Southwest State University, Minneapolis at the Bell Museum, of course, Moorhead, Minnesota State University Moorhead, Rochester Mayo High School, St. Cloud State University, and the St. Paul Como Park Junior High School.
Okay. And that might be helpful for us to get a copy of, and we'll distribute to members. Representative Norton, did you have any further?
No, thank you,
Representative Gunther.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, to that
just
point?
Just real quick to Representative Norton. So your point is that if the infrastructure needs of Rochester were met, they'd be able to get out easier. Is that correct?
Thank you for the plug, Representative Rudolph.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You done, oh. Representative Rudolph?
Sorry.
Testifier. I remember when the Minneapolis Library, downtown library, we're going to put in a planetarium, and we had a $10 million bonding.
22, I think.
22, was it? And the thing that they told me that kind of sticks, and I want to verify if this is true or not, that the skies were so polluted or overcast over downtown Minneapolis that they had to take a movie of it and show that movie in the ceiling of the planetarium. Is that true?
Well, I can't speak to the exact statement that you heard, but it is true that light pollution in the center of the city is an enormous problem. If you go stand in downtown Minneapolis, you cannot hardly see any stars at all. Even in the far suburbs last night, there's a very bright comet that's visible right now. I tried to see it from my home. I couldn't because the skies were simply too bright. If you have gone to any part of the outstate Minnesota away from the big cities and away from the lights, it is incredible what you see. The skies are very, very different. And if you haven't had a chance to do that, I really encourage you to do so.
Thank you.
And, of course, the nature of a planetarium today is actually you're not looking at the sky. You're looking at the...
Correct. You're looking at a projection of the sky. And with the new technology that we have, not only can we show the sky from how it would look here in Minneapolis or elsewhere on Earth, we can actually project the sky from how it would look at another star or another galaxy or the inside of a human heart, any other kind of three-dimensional object. So it's a very different kind of experience than what we would have had before.
Did you follow up?
You want to follow up? Just find this fascinating.
And I don't know when you came in, but just to clarify, that planetarium that was going to be in Minneapolis is now part of this project.
That is correct. It's
going to be, so they're changing the nature of their auditorium a bit. It will be both the Museum of Natural History and the planetarium. That project in Minneapolis didn't evolve,
okay.
So we eventually canceled that. Representative Mahoney has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to follow up, when my colleague says that St. Paul must have more money for its transit, my kids have been out of school for many years, but I have a student staying with me right now, and as a responsible parent, adult in the, in his life, they send me these requests for field trips, and at the bottom of each one, there's a "Would you care to donate to the scholarship fund for transportation?" So it's parents like myself that are paying for that. Thank you. But my question to the planetarium, and I've always supported the non-Bell Museum of Natural History. But technology is changing so dramatically, so quickly. What is your plan for 8 years or 12 years out when the projection equipment is essentially obsolete, so obsolete that you will have to be scouring on eBay to find parts, which is happening across the state in our sports facilities and our schools. So do you have a funding plan that puts away $500,000 or $1 million in raised funds every year for the 5 or 10 or 15 years out when you're going to need to replace all that equipment?
Ms. Weller.
Madam Chair and Representative Mahoney.
Just don't call me late for breakfast.
as a steward of your state's Natural History Museum and Planetarium, we have an operating budget, which is provided by the state, and then we have earned revenue. We have a mix of revenue sources, and then we have private donations and endowments. And we are currently building an endowment for the planetarium operations. And so I can't lay out for you a specific business plan for the new facility at this moment. That is under development. But I assure you that just as I have been a responsible fiscal steward this last few years through the recession, including downsizing the staff a third within the first 2 years of the recession, that I'm well aware of the needs to be prudent and fiscally responsible, and we will be able to replace that equipment when it ages. So that's, I can tell you based on past practices, that's what we've done and will continue to do.
To Representative Norton's point, though, it might be helpful for us to see the dollars that you have been able to raise privately for the issue of helping schools with bus transportation. If that's, is that accessible information that could be sent to us, or if it's available, it just might be helpful for us to get a sense of.
I can, Madam Chair, I would be willing to share our annual operating report, and the I can look to break out some of those numbers
and
for
and
you.
If, it may not be possible, but since she raised the question of declining dollars for students to get there. Members, I would just call your attention not only to their slide, but to the insert we put into your packets, because I think this 1872 law establishing this has, I think, an encouragement for us. Under their slide, it begins, "It shall be the duty of the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota to cause to be begun as soon as may be practicable and to carry on a thorough geological and natural history survey of the state." That was an 1872 directive of the state to the University of Minnesota. But the page that we copied for you, Section 6, "It shall be the duty of the said Board of Regents to cause proper specimens skillfully prepared to be preserved for public inspection free of cost in the University of Minnesota in rooms convenient of access and properly warmed, lighted, ventilated, and furnished, and in charge of a proper scientific curator." This was the direction of the state of Minnesota in 1872, and of course, what I'm hearing them say is right now they are not properly warmed, lighted, ventilated, and I think that's the that vision that in 1872 legislators have. We need to revisit, I think, as we look at this.
So, Madam Chair, did you want us to call the police and have the Board of Regents arrested?
Well, I think actually this might be our responsibility now. We established it, and perhaps we haven't. Let me just ask you to talk about one other piece, and I probably should have had the DNR in today, and I overlooked that. I have talked to them recently, and they are still interested in that joint venture at that corner. If you, if any of you know the corner of Cleveland and Larpenteur, this is where the university soccer fields are. It's also right across the street from where the Gibbs Farm is, which is a restored early farm with a good bit of visitation from school kids as well. But that corner provides far more land than, of course, would ever be possible on the landlocked main campus in Minneapolis. And so the DNR had, at one point, there were plans for this joint venture, and I know they are still interested, and I don't know how much you have had conversation about that, but if you could speak to that at all.
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the committee. The as you see here...
he's here. We have somebody here. I didn't realize he must have seen this on the agenda. This would be great.
Yes. Please join us.
Welcome.
Hi, Madam Chair. Kent Lockes, Moulton DNR. And I think the conversation about our partnership with the university that's going on so far is correct. And we would be interested in partnering with them on the outside exhibits, on the development of that portion of this project. And we did have a request in 2008 I think it was $4 million at that time for the outside piece. And obviously the outside piece is going to follow what happens on the construction of the building. But we are still interested in pursuing that.
And that, members, and Mr. Lacosmo, there were in a sense, outdoor classrooms, the Minnesota biomes. You would show what a Minnesota prairie or a Minnesota forest?
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
And so that was the joint venture, and I think we would still see that as possible on that corner because there is so much space available. So thanks. Thanks for being here. As I understood it, there were also some academic reasons for the move, that moving the collections that the Bell Museum had puts them in closer proximity to the St. Paul campus, which has other collections, and that that whole academic exercise would be facilitated. And then the building that would be vacated on the main campus would potentially be a possible relocation for the College of Design, which then would put it closer to its academic programs.
Madam Chair, that is correct. The six-year capital plan, which is now probably the 12 or 16-year capital plan, envisions the Bell Museum of Natural History moving to the St. Paul campus. Our scientific collections of over 4 million specimens are already over there, plus the other CFANS scientific collections of another at least 4 million objects are total. So you would have the museum aligned with the scientific collections. The Goldstein Museum of Design and the Department of Clothing and Apparel in College of Design would then move from the St. Paul campus into a restored Bell Museum building and would be kitty-corner to CDES's main building.
And I've always predicted that were this relocation to happen at the corner of Cleveland and Larpenteur, that the visitorship might quadruple just because it's more visible and accessible, easily accessible from Highways 35 and 36. And a lot of people are intimidated to go to the Minneapolis campus and find a building and find parking, but I think this would allow for much easier bus access. Representative Mahoney?
That could be a fearsome, locating there could be problematic because all the moms and dads that are going shopping over at Rosedale could just drop their kids off, send them over there and while they go shopping. I think I agree with the chair. It's very likely because of that, the state fair and the proximity and visibility, but yeah.
Madam Chair, I would welcome such a problem.
And the Gibbs Farm across the street, which is a Ramsey County Historical Society and project and does get a lot of visitors, assumes that schools will see a value in visiting both sites. We'll have to figure out safely how to move kids across that street, but that's another problem. Any other questions for this project? So a combined project that now combines not only DNR's interest in an external classroom for kids to learn at the Natural History Museum and also the planetarium. So we thank you for being with us. And members, we have a number of bills that they haven't necessarily moved through the process, and so some of these are I think we're going to be information only. But they have to do with, in some cases, potentially setting up new programs in bonding or our policy issues. And we're going to hear some of them next week. If we don't have them in our possession, we would just hear them for information. There are two Representative Moline bills. There's a Representative Ward bill, McNamer, Purcell, and Fisher. And so at this point, though we don't have those bills, we don't want to be surprised should that concept arise because we're sort of late in the process. So we're going to be spending a little bit of time on those. Do we have any other announcements? Representative Ward, are you, you've looked at the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and I'll move that.
Any other changes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, those minutes are approved. And I think we are adjourned. Thank you.